everyone, and welcome to minute 117 of season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth podcast. Welcome back to the show, Heather.
Hello, thank you for having me back. It's been fantastic in the last 24 hours since we talked.
I promise I will never even think about going up in a tall building again.
I'm okay with it. I'm actually okay with it. I can't go to the windows anymore. Now that I'm getting older, I have vertigo and it's awful.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I never experienced it when I was younger. I never had issues with heights, anything like that. Now, Even a couple weekends ago, I was off on a run and I came to the edge of a bluff and it was maybe 100 feet high. It was just really steep. So I went to the edge. I was going to take a picture of it. And then I went, oh no, can't do that. Must go back. I was in the middle of the woods. So
wow.
I decided, yeah, I should probably head back. So
oh,
yeah,
wow.
No windows in tall buildings for me.
As long as you can leap them in, you know, leap over tall buildings in a single bound, then you're good.
Oh, I can do that. I just have to close my eyes and hope.
Okay, there you go. There you go. I'm assuming that Kal-El did that, or Clark Kent did that the first time also. You know, it makes sense.
I'm certain. Besides, who knows? I might find out I can fly. Improbable, I know. But
okay, but start with short distances. You know, don't start with... Don't start by jumping off the 30th floor to check that. You know, this isn't the Matrix.
No.
As far as we know.
That we know of.
Exactly.
Ah, touche.
There you go. All right. So minute 117 begins with Hans making a decision and ends with gravity taking control of the hose reel.
Yes.
So yesterday we ended things off with John standing on the precipice of the edge of the roof, debating what to do. He has this loosely tied water hose around his waist, but he's looking back and doesn't want to get shot. So you'd think that the chopper would see him at this point, because now that he's standing up again, you know.
Yes.
But maybe it's just when they're making their you know, turn around. I don't know.
That is also possible, or they're waiting for sniper to actually be able to line up a shot, because it does take precision. I mean, if we're thinking about it on a level of realism here.
Mm-hmm.
So they might not have a shot lined up already if they're going in for specifically the kill and not just to disarm him as well.
Right.
But I like how you specifically mentioned that it is loosely tied, because it is loose.
Yes.
But what would you prefer, too? Would you prefer a death of getting shot up by bullets, or would you take the chance and jump off the building and hope?
I don't know. That's a really, really dark question, because it makes me go back to, you know, I'm going to say it because it comes to my mind. The day of 9/11, you know, the idea that there were people who jumped off instead of wanting to burn, or instead of trying to find a way to get through, stuff like that. You know, I hope that no one is ever in those type of situations where you need to make that type of decision. We'll never know why they made the decisions that they made, but you know, this is the question that you're asking, right? Basically.
Yeah.
This is the Sophie's choice of death, you know?
Well, I thought about it when this time looking over it, and I went, well, this is kind of what's happening too. He's definitely a fighter when it comes to fight or flight instinct, but at this point he's not just trying to fight for himself. He wants to go save his wife, which puts his own safety in a different space in his mind. So he's not thinking about things necessarily the way he would if it was just John fighting the bad guys or John trying to survive on his own. He's thinking beyond what his normal thoughts are here. However, sure. I think I empathize with the jumping off to a degree too. There's a far greater chance getting shot or blown up that you're going to die, and it's either going to be quick and painful or it's going to be long and painful. Jumping off, gives you at least the chance to survive, and you're not necessarily going to regret it until you're already in the air.
Right.
Sure. It might seem like a better choice at the moment, and then perhaps regretful afterwards. Like you said, I can't possibly know, but I think I
and I hope you never need to know.
I hope nobody ever needs to know, which I'm sure people unfortunately will.
Right.
But yeah, I think I kind of get that. I think I understand that. I actually do. Yeah.
I actually just thought of the fact that why didn't he try to just run for the door again to be able to go down? You know, the hostages all just got through there. So run back to the door. You know, obviously he doesn't want to get shot. So maybe that's his concern. You know, he needs to figure out when, you know, they're reloading or they're not at an angle where they can shoot at him. But again, it goes back to the typical answer of when you don't know about why something happens in a movie, it's because that's what the script needed. You know, they wanted to have this action shot of him jumping off the roof. That's what it comes down to. So this minute actually begins with Hans, you know, and Eddie. Eddie ended yesterday's minute by saying, there's something wrong with it. They're coming back down. And Hans immediately goes, blow the roof. And then Christoph, who we have seen like three times in the whole movie, you know, he's like Theo's assistant. This is, I think, one of his first lines in the movie. He goes, but Carl's up there. You know, and I always thought that line was his. He said McCloud is up there. You know, he like garbles the way he says it, but Carl. So it always sounded to me like McCloud is up there.
And, yeah, you're right.
And then Hans turns to him and goes, blow the roof. And he actually, it's funny, he says it as if he's giving an order, but then he goes over and grabs the detonator himself.
Because he doesn't trust anybody to get it done other than himself.
No, but then why give the order?
I feel like that's just what he does. He's a man in charge. He's used to people following his directions, and he expects that. But the fact that he said, but what about Carl? Suddenly somebody's questioning him. Well, he can't – now he's been questioned. He can't expect that the line is going to be followed. He's not going to expect that the order is going to be followed now. Before, there was just obedience. Now – I mean, that actually works for me. It's legitimate. It's – well, Frick, you're asking me questions here. No, then I'll do it if you can't be trusted. I mean, as a parent, too, I feel like that's sometimes where I'm going, can you please go do that? Can you please go do that? And most of the time the kid listens. But if they're not going to, give it to me. I'm just going to do it myself, because if it's going to get done, I'm going to have to get it done.
Right. Okay. And I can definitely empathize with that.
it's a very brief moment, but that's the feeling I got from it.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's kind of how I read it.
That's fair. That's fair. And then we get another shot of the Huey hovering over the roof. And then John is still standing there on the ledge. And, you know, he says like a sort of a prayer. You know, he goes, I promise I will never even think about going up in a tall building again. Oh, God, please don't let me die. Now, the thing that got me, if you're paying attention, like we are doing here, if you go to second 19, okay, when he's giving this quote-unquote prayer,
yeah,
do you notice something very strange right behind him?
No, at 19 seconds?
Yes.
So the chopper.
Okay, first of all, the chopper is lined up beautifully for a shot of John. Yes. They finally found it.
Yes.
Okay, but that's not the thing that's crazy here. What is
in barbed wire?
That's right. There's barbed wire. Why the hell do you need barbed wire on the top of a 30-something story building? Are you trying to keep the cows from getting into your ranch? I mean, like, what are you trying to keep away? You don't use barbed wire for pigeons.
No, maybe there's some kind of. I mean, he's over in the area where all of the fire hose and everything is. So maybe there's emergency stuff there. There's electrical stuff, perhaps. Sometimes they have maintenance sheds on top of the roof, which you wouldn't want anyone to be able to access, and not necessarily a situation like this, but perhaps in a situation like this, they don't want easy access to that kind of thing. I don't know. I'm just shooting.
That's great.
At the wall right
now. No problem.
But I mean, there's maybe some ideas. I could see actually the barbed wire being around the actual perimeter of the roof to stop jumpers.
Hello, you can actually build, you know, something. You don't need to put barbed wire there.
No. It seems a little odd. If I had to zero in on something, I would say that there's some kind of, and I can't remember exactly, but I would say that there's some kind of maintenance or perhaps an electrical area right there that they wouldn't want just someone who came up onto the roof for whatever reason to be able to access easily. That would be my guess if I had to try and rationalize it.
Okay. That's fair. So what do you know about barbed wire?
It hurts like an SOB.
In what year do you think someone thought of the idea of barbed wire and actually got it patented for the first time?
I don't know, but I know it wasn't Pam Anderson.
No. Definitely.
No, I have no idea. It's been around for quite a long time, though, because it is used for farming and keeping livestock in. Well, I think it was used for that long before it was used for anything else. I might be wrong.
You are completely correct. That is the first thing that it was used for. The patent was issued in 1867 to a man named Lucien B. Smith of Kent, Ohio, who everyone regards him as the inventor of the barbed wire. Okay, the idea is to have, you know, steel fencing wire constructed with sharp edges or points arranged at intervals along the strands. Okay, sometimes it's used as inexpensive fences, and it's used atop walls surrounding security property.
Okay. And you can toss a towel or a thick blanket over it and climb over on top of it. But otherwise, I wouldn't recommend trying to get around it.
Yeah, it was awful. Mostly used for livestock at the beginning, or to keep livestock either in or out. And it worked. It generally works because cows don't like getting pricked by it, I guess. Yeah.
No, it hurts. It hurts.
But it started being used for other things during World War I, where they would use it to try to halt the passage of soldiers or to keep them, you know, into narrow areas, you know, so that you can, shoot them much easier.
Well, and it works really well for that, too, because it doesn't just hurt to
you move also get
through,
stuck.
But you also get, you get stuck. You get tangled up in it.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
As they also use really well in the film Tremors.
Correct. Now, many armies train their soldiers that even if you're injured by barbed wire, then what you do is you have several soldiers who will lie across the wire to form like a type of bridge so that the rest of the formation can pass over. Sometimes you use live people. Sometimes you use no longer live people for that type of thing. You know. But it is something that is used quite often. You know, in Norway,
on the roofs of buildings.
In Norway, it's illegal to use barbed wire anymore.
Really?
Yes.
What is the reason for that? Do you know?
Yes, because they say that it's cruelty to animals, and therefore you need to use electric fences. I think electric fences are probably crueler.
That's what I feel. I was just going to say exactly the same thing. It doesn't take long for an animal to bump up against it and go, ouch, that's a bad plan. And even an animal that is not intelligent, which cows are not, they can figure that out. Whereas I've gotten electrical charges before. It's not pleasant.
Yes.
At all. Yeah, I'm with you there. I feel.
But like what's very interesting is that Rolls-Royce actually uses Norwegian hides from cows to produce the leather in their cars, because the hides from Norwegian cattle have fewer scratches than hides from countries where there is barbed wire. I found that to be pretty funny. You know, that's the reason that hand it to Rolls-Royce to think of something like that.
Yeah, I'll be buying strictly Rolls from here on out.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just open my piggy bank for my next car purchase.
Exactly. Then the shot changes, right? And we see Big Johnson you know, looking directly towards John as he's getting ready. John's getting ready to jump. And at the same, go back to what we said yesterday. The editing here is amazing because then it switches to Hans. We see Hans lift up the pump on the detonator, and then it goes back to Big Johnson taking aim. And then the score here is once again amazing. You know, really adds to the suspense of everything. Then we see John leap into the air, sort of in slow motion. And as he's doing that, Hans pushes the pump down. And then we see John flying through the air and, you know, has his hands above him as if he's maybe bungee jumping or something like that. Yeah. You know, we can still see that the gun is strapped to him. Now, I've always noticed this. As this happens, behind John, it looks like there's a flare that shoots up. Did you ever notice that?
I noticed that there is explosion, and it seems like it's kind of happening everywhere. I didn't notice that there was anything specific, like, right behind him.
There's, like, something that shoots up right behind him, right as he's jumping. And it's just, it's really cool.
Oh, there is. Yeah. There is. Oh, God, that shot's so great.
Yeah.
That, it's right. As far as
if you look at the second 25, you can see it. It looks like a firework that's, like, shooting up or something like that. I mean, this is something I've noticed before. Yep. This isn't the first time I've noticed this, but you can also see how loose the hose is in that freeze frame also.
The whole perspective here is great because, and you pointed this out too, is you get all of the angles. You get the villain's angle. You get the chopper. You get John's. You get the side of the building, and then you get the wide pan shot, so you're far away, what it looks like from across the city. I mean, and all of this happens in a matter of like 5-10 seconds.
Yeah.
And then masterful, beautiful,
the explosions.
Yeah, they just look incredible. And it's because they're practical effects too.
Yeah.
I mean, if this movie was done today, all of this or most of this would probably be CGI for the most part.
Yeah.
I hate to be one of those people that say they don't make them like they used to, but I mean,
but they don't.
They really don't. They really don't. And some things are improvement now, and some things are great in that aspect, but because of the way this film is shot, it's made to last.
Yes.
And it's sequences like this where we're literally breaking down second to second, looking at it, and it all looks amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
And then we see a shot from afar with the explosion, and the fire starts off really small and then it like billows out, and you see that it also encompasses the helicopter that's there. You know, as we see all of the top of Nakatomi, you know, on fire, which is great. And then we get a shot from inside the Huey, which is also amazing. Because if you watch that like really slowly, you see you can see both Johnsons as, you know, the fire is around them and it will just engulfs them. You know, engulfs the helicopter. I mean, they didn't do any effects where you see someone on fire, but you see the fire through the window, and like Johnson is still holding his gun, aiming, which shows how quickly this happened. He doesn't even have any time to react.
No. And the people next to him too, they're not reacting yet either. They're just
okay. Like, I think that has to do with the fact that the fire is not really happening behind them. You know, I think
that's true. But they're leaning forward. But they're leaning forward because you can see that they're still reacting to something.
Yeah.
Maybe they're getting out of his way so he can take the shot. But they're not. They're not realizing that they're done for.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Correct.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You can see the flames right out of the side of the chopper before it's consumed the chopper. And all of this stuff happens within like 10 seconds.
Yeah. It's really, really quick and it's just amazing. And then we get a shot of, you know, everyone downstairs waiting in the staging area. And first of all, they're really lit up here. From the explosion. I mean, you're 30 floors up, but there's still so much light coming from this fire that, you know, that when Jan de Bont lit the area, he lit it so that you can, you know, see everyone down at the bottom really, really well. And you hear someone scream. You can't tell who it is, but you hear someone scream, holy shit.
Yep.
Which is the type of expression that you would expect from someone, you know, looking up and seeing the you know, the top of a building like this just being engulfed in flames. So it sort of makes sense. And then it goes back to John, and we hear him yelling as he is, like, falling down from the building, you know, on the side. Now, we said yesterday that a hose reel generally is about 100 feet, okay? So how many floors do you think John has fallen down here?
I was guessing about 5 to 10. I was thinking 5 to 10. He goes down quite a bit because he avoids all the flames on the,
correct,
the top,
okay, that's true,
floors.
How what do you think the average height of a floor or a story is in a building?
I would guess average, I would just toss out 10 as a number.
Okay, the general average is about 14 feet.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Okay, all right. So that would mean that if it's 14 feet, again, we can't really measure the distances here, but we can guesstimate. So we can say, okay, if it's 14 feet for each floor, okay, and you have a hose that's 100 feet. I mean, I know it sounds like a math problem, but I hate math, so... You know, I'm not going too deep into this.
This is one of those that the train is going in this direction.
If the train leaves
55 watermelon,
if the train leaves Livonia on its way to Southfield, you know.
Oh goodness.
Yeah. But, so 14 feet. So that would basically mean that was it 14 times 4? No.
Let's be generous and say 5. Let's say he only went down 5. 5 floors.
Okay. All right. That's actually the answer that I'm going to come up with in the end. That, forgetting about, you know, doing the measurements, but I think he goes down about 5 floors because, you know, we'll find out later in the week where he ends up. You know, we find out where he ends up, and that is 5 floors down. You know, so even so, but 5 floors would be maybe 70 feet. You know, and the distance from where the boxes with the hose reel and the ledge, let's say it's another 10 feet, 15 feet, you know, so you'd add another one there or something like that. So yeah. Okay. It makes sense. It's about five floors, 6 floors.
So it does.
Something from that perspective, you know, about how he jumps down. And so he's yelling as he's flying down. And then they give us a shot of the hose itself, the reel, you know, reaching the end of its spool, right? And then at that point, there's another explosion. And, you know, there's a big flash. And then we see the hose reel start to, like, move a little bit, and it disconnects. And then we see John fall down a little further. Okay. So, first of all, there's no way that his weight is not going to pull it down. You know,
Even in a second,
the metal that's there shouldn't stay as long as it does. It should
have,
you know, he's counterweighting it much more than what's believable here.
Yeah. In reality, which it's not.
Of course.
If this had actually happened, he would have had to have come through that window immediately. And that is the only way it would have worked. And that's not what happened here.
No.
Even if there wasn't a secondary explosion and it didn't come loose, it still would not have held. Simply because, and I don't think it's because, which I think I said in yesterday's show, I don't think it's because of the actual strength of the hose itself. I think the hose is more than strong enough to do exactly this. I think it's because the attachment to the reel is not strong enough,
right?
Because it wasn't intended.
Well, no, the attachment to the reel is strong, but the attachment of the reel to the box, that's what's not strong.
Yeah. So that though, that would not hold up. His weight alone and coming down that hard, there's no way. He'd have one, maybe two chances to get through the window, which.
We'll get to it in a second. So he, as we see this happen, he like bangs against the side of the building, which really looks like that's gonna hurt. You know, the way that he hits that, and then we get a shot.
Yeah, well, that's just a mere flesh wound for him at this point.
That's true. He's already been shot. He has a bullet hole in his shoulder. You know, which thankfully was a through and through. makes things a little easier.
Movie heroes can just go on. That's fine. It's a problem for a moment until it's not a problem.
That's correct. That's correct. And then we get a shot from the ground level again, seeing the flames billowing up on the top of the roof, which it's a great pan up, the way that they zoom up past the entire building for us to see that. We see all the flames.
The constant shifting of perspectives, I think, is nothing short of genius. They linger long enough for you to invest and see what you need to see, but it moves quickly enough that you're not stuck from that point of view. And then in that entire time, to the sequence of the story and what's happening to McClane and everybody else is also moving forward. It's all moving so fast. There's just so much that happens in such a short period of time.
For sure. It's just done really well. And then it has the one of my all-time favorite stills of this movie. Okay, we see John from inside the we're looking from inside the building, and we see his feet on the glass,
The
smearing
bloody
blood.
feet. Ah.
Now I remember, and you might remember this too, back in the Detroit area. When you'd go to the movies before the movie would start, so they would have all of these stills. It must have been AMC at the time already by that point. This was like late 80s, early 90s, and they would have stills of different movies that would just flash on the screen. And this still of John McClane hanging on for his life with his bloody feet up against the window, was one of the shots that I always would love to see. It was one of the standard ones that they would have there. I don't remember any of the others. This is the only one I remember. But
Because it's fantastic.
yes.
And I mean, okay, and
And
there's
it's
this
Die Hard,
commitment to it too. It's Die Hard. It's Die Hard, but I mean, this is definitely commitment to a situation that was created too, where he's had no shoes and his feet have gotten cut up and destroyed, and they aren't running away from that or solving that problem or ignoring that problem. It's a continued issue. But the shot here is incredible. I mean, he's just covered in blood, and I hate feet. I cannot stand feet. They creep me out. I am the opposite of Quentin Tarantino. I do not like them. I do not want them. But this shot is epic for all that it is.
Yes.
It's really great. It's amazing.
They actually look like hobbit feet.
They look like they hurt.
That
His dags are tired. His dags are tired. They've had a long day. John's had a bad day, but his feet have had a much worse day.
yes. Night.
Night. Yes, it's all an evening. This is true.
Yes. That is true. And then, I mean, he doesn't stay there very long. He's like slipping and sliding on the window, trying to figure out a way of getting some sort of traction, something. And he's not able to do it. Nothing works. So then he decides to swing himself backwards, which is actually quite smart. He swings himself back once, and then he pulls out his pistol and just shoots into the glass and breaks it.
And if you're going to do it, this would be the way to do it. Swing back with the momentum, shoot while you're coming in, and hope. And you probably only get one chance to make it, or you're going all the way down. But I mean,
Correct.
if you're going to, that's the only way it'd work. Would it? I don't know. I don't know. It would depend on the glass. And buildings like that, the glass is built so strong because it has to withstand winds. It has to withstand, birds. Possibly, potentially flying in there, debris, all of nature that we can't avoid. I know that that glass, the higher you go, it has to be incredibly strong.
Yeah.
But I haven't tried to shoot bullets through the window of a skyscraper either, so
Especially from the outside.
especially from the outside. I think it's safe to say they're probably not bulletproof on purpose. On purpose.
But
The
again,
intention
if you think
of
about if you
propelling the
think
bullet.
back to the beginning of or the middle of the movie, right before, when John is trying to get Al's attention, 30-something floors up. He takes the chair and starts trying to break the window with the chair, and that doesn't work. You know, he just makes a hole in the window. Yeah. You know, it doesn't shatter. Yeah. He needs to use Marco's body in order to shatter the whole thing. So,
yep.
I don't know. And then John, you know, swings into he does a Tarzan move, swinging into the building. And then he's quite happy. He's lying on his stomach, very happy. And then the movie adds a little more suspense, and we get to see the fire hose start flying down behind him, you know, with the metal, you know, just being taken by gravity and, you know, shooting downwards. And we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out what happens with that. But
yes, it's
great. First of all, it's a great place to actually stop the minute. That really works well. You know, as it just flies right by, whoosh, you know, the whole thing. Yeah.
it's another cliffhanger.
There you go.
We have them every 10 seconds on this show, just so you guys know.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, Heather, you have anything else you want to say before we get to the script?
Let's go to the script. I'm curious.
Okay. So the script has a few things here. First of all, remember what I mentioned, that Eddie is not here. So Hans...
Yes.
So Hans is actually the one who notices all of the hostages running by. Okay, he goes, schnell, schnell. And then something catches his eye. He turns and looks through the window, and through the glass, he can catch a glimpse of the hostages coming back into the room. Hans whirls towards Christoph and says, blow the roof now. And Christoph says, but Carl and Uli are up there. Camera adjusts to show the remote detonator on a table. Hans goes towards it. Hans extends the antenna, hits the button. The long shot of the roof. The helipad explodes. A fireball rolls into the sky. The hostages lose their footing on the floor. Dust and debris fall down, but they're okay. Johnson & Johnson's chopper strains to avoid the rising fireball, but it can't. It's caught in the explosion. It tips over. A rotor hits the roof. It crashes, explodes, tumbles down the side of the building. Again, I know this is something that's going to happen later in the week, but it all fits in together here. Dangling against the side of the building, McLean ducks and winces as flaming debris soars past him. And then a shot of the hose wheel device. Flame roars towards it, engulfs it. It jerks on its foundation, pivots 180 degrees as several bolts slip. McLean drops several more feet. He swallows, then kicks against the side of the building, his bloody feet leaving smears. The shatterproof glass doesn't budge. Wincing as more flaming debris sizzles by, McLean levels the machine gun, kicks off from the building, swings back 10 feet, reaches the zenith of his arc, fires the gun, and sails back in. McLean smashes through the shattered glass, sails inside, rolls onto the floor, plowing through furniture and decor. Finally, he stops, catches his breath with relief, rises to one knee. The fire hose mounting is blasted off the roof, sails past the camera. The hose mechanism tumbles downwards.
And more future doom.
Yeah, seriously. But they do that well. They explain that well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, very, very.
I like the descriptive nature of it. You know, it really... You know, knowing what happens in the movie and then reading it in the script, they did a good job of you know, filming what was written there. That's what it comes down to.
But I think too, yeah. It's definitely what I would have visualized. Well, probably not as well, but what I would have visualized had I read it and had not seen it. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, that it definitely is. Okay, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, or something that happened to them over the course of their lives that's somehow related to the holidays. So you got a story for us?
Yeah, and it's actually just kind of a feel-good one. I'm not going to
tell. Feel-good ones are good.
Yeah. It was actually trick-or-treating last year. So my youngest is 5 now. He's going to be 6 in 2 weeks. But my oldest child is 19. So I have a bit of a dichotomy there. My older children are, you know, past the stage of doing a lot of the fun things like trick-or-treating. And Halloween is easily my favorite season holiday of the entire year. I go a little wonky with it. And my favorite part is going through the neighborhood and trick-or-treating with the kids. So especially after COVID, post-COVID, this was nice. Everybody felt kind of like everybody's houses were open again, and I took the little guy out. But my oldest asked me, he said, am I too old to go trick-or-treating?
Ooh.
And I said, I'd go trick-or-treating if I felt like dressing up. I don't think, and I 100% think, I don't care if you're 49 and you come to my door with a costume, I'll give you candy. In fact, I'll give you more candy.
Oh, wow.
I'd give you booze if you asked for it, but I don't have booze. I don't drink anymore. But which some houses do that. But yeah, so him and his girlfriend ended up dressing up. She goes to an art school, and she had made this incredible angel wings that literally opened out. They were like 10 feet wide. She would have to go sideways when we'd go by people walking down the street. And they had lights, and they lit up and stuff too. So, and my son dressed up as Bob Ross, and the littlest one as Spider-Man. So we all went trick-or-treating together, and it was just a simple, regular Halloween, but it was really cool to have the two of them together, and kind of knowing, too, that was one of the last things I was going to do that way with my oldest.
You never know. Maybe he'll surprise you and want to go again this year.
If he does, and his girlfriend does, too, I would be absolutely delighted, but I'm going to cherish that memory forever. It was the first thing I thought of when I thought about holidays this year.
That's great.
Especially since the last ones I did were Thanksgiving ones. usually the Thanksgiving and Christmas ones come with some kind of debauchery. So
that's true. Just wait till next season. When you know, I won't tell you what next season is yet. We'll have to wait and see, but we'll have to see where your stories come from there. You know.
Yes.
All right.
It's a good thing I'm not too boring most of the time.
Yeah, no, you're a lot of fun to talk to. All right. So, Heather, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you once again?
Yes, you can find me on the socials as HB Walsh, which is my pen name. You can find me there on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. If you want to check out my book, it's a fun fantasy dystopian future story called The Prophecy, Part One Lost. You can look for that on Amazon, hardcover. You can get it on Kindle. You know, it's available on every form. Part two will be coming out hopefully at the end of the year, early January at the latest. And we've got at least one episode out now of the new podcast I'm on. It's a Buffy rewatch podcast called Word of Hellmouth. I'm hosting with Mark Armstead, and it's on Rabbit Hole Podcasts on Patreon and such. So give us a listen if you're into Buffster.
Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, mofo.